Welcome to another Friends in Wonder podcast, a place where we invite you to wonder with us about meaningful topics without judgment or limits. Brought to you by two lifelong friends looking for insights through a lens of how can this help?
I'm Joe Luther.
And I'm Vince Kern, and we're your hosts. Now let's wander and wonder together. Hey, Joe, how you doing today?
Oh, Vince, I'm pumped up as always. How you doing?
That's good, because I'm pumped up too. Our topic today is right up our alley. It's something we've been talking about for 40 years.
Especially up your alley, because it's about the news, and that was your world for a very long time.
Yeah, about 30 years or so in the journalism field. And I found this great report from the University of North Carolina on vanishing newspapers, influence on local news.
Oh, yeah, we're
news
all aware
deserts.
Of that. Yep.
Yeah.
That's it.
Do you remember when we used to have, you know, local papers coming to our door?
I think you and I used to deliver them.
We did, didn't we? You know, new restaurant opens up or something's happening in the school board.
Yep, exactly.
You know, four or five reporters covering these things.
All eyes were on the local news.
Mm-hmm. And what do we got now?
Well, we've got a lot of national news. We've got a lot of internet news.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I think you're about to tell us, we have a dwindling landscape in local news.
I am. You saw the paper in my hand, didn't you?
I did.
Well, we're going to start off with some facts today. And this is from the University of North Carolina report. And it is titled somewhere on here. You know, all good reports have a title. And I don't have it on my notes, but I'll get it at the
well,
end.
Well, yeah.
We'll link to it.
How's that? Later.
Yeah. Okay. So since 2004, the United States has lost one-fourth or 2,100 of its newspapers. This includes 70 dailies and more than 2,000 weeklies and non-dailies.
My goodness. So 70 dailies, yeah, those would all be in pretty big markets.
Yeah, those would be big markets. So yeah. That's more of a you know, local for those
local's
markets.
Local. But yeah.
Local, I mean, you know, depending on your
bubble.
As far
as I'm concerned, local is Detroit.
Right. Yeah. But in Detroit, you know, so you've got Royal Oak, Birmingham,
right,
Southfield.
There's all the suburbs within.
Right. And a lot of the newspapers used to cater specifically to those. And that's what sounds like is being lost here, these weeklies non-dailies.
What do you think the impact of these news deserts, as they call them? What do you think that means to us? Why is that important?
Well, it's important, and I'm going to quote our guest today. We have a guest who has started a fabulous local news operation in Batavia.
A success story in New York.
Big success story, serving a community that doesn't have a local news desert because of his ventures, but we'll talk more about him later. But what I think it means, Joe, and you've said this before, and we've had a lot of conversations about journalism over the years, but it's as much about what's not getting covered and what's not being said.
Right.
As it
people
is.
Don't know what they're not getting.
Right.
It's one thing that news can be crafted and shaped and influenced by whatever influences there are out there, usually profit driven. But when you don't even get a story, you don't realize that you're in a news desert. And that's really what this whole idea of the dwindling landscape of local news is all about.
Right. And to quote that Howard referenced, that I'm referencing from Howard, is that without local news, democracy basically dies.
Right. Well, I believe that, because really, I mean, our whole republic was founded on this grassroots kind of local first, and then work your way out to the more national and well, now we're talking about global today, but yeah, it was the founding fathers were most concerned about empowering people at the local level. The same is true about information.
Exactly. And I guess it's about that time in the podcast where I have to come clean and say, Joe, you were right.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell me more.
Well, since the beginning of my when I was a pie-eyed, eager...
idealistic?
Cub reporter. Who
well, believed we were both that way, Vince. I just like to pick on you. What was I right about?
Well, you were right, because even before the internet, back in the early 80s, when we were sitting around talking about these things, you were very aware of the influence of corporate media and big tech.
Oh, yeah, the old follow the money idea. That's right. And so how does that play into this local news thing, though?
Well, well, over the last 40 years, we've seen what corporate influence has done. And in the 90s, 10 years after you said it, the internet came along and brought Google and Facebook into the playing field.
Yeah, right. And that's true. And Google ads have probably taken away from a lot of the local news classifieds. I know that car companies traditionally used to advertise in the classifieds.
Yep.
I mean, there were literally sections in the newspaper where you would look to find a car,
yep,
and those are all gone.
Google and others have literally destroyed that.
So the revenues of ads have gone through, mm-hmm, really the Google way, and then there's Facebook with all their attempt at trying to control local news.
Well, everybody's a self-publisher now. So while Google deals with advertising, Facebook sort of takes the content.
So all those local feel-good stories.
Right. And this is something that our guest, Howard Owens, deals with every day. And I am happy that he is willing to join us today.
This is interesting. This is very interesting. And I kind of agree. Maybe democracy does depend on this kind of a story.
And we're going to ask Howard about this. He's been in the journalism field for at least 30 years. He's had experience in both corporate media operations, some rather large ones, and he left to start his own business in Batavia, New York. And it may be kind of curious to people why we would interview someone from Batavia, New York.
Yeah, but it's just like Main Street, USA. It's a microcosm of the rest of the country, really.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a place where Howard has successfully managed to bring local news to his readers.
So he's a shining example for all the rest of those news deserts out there.
Yeah, and hopefully some journalists out there may listen to this and say, hey, I can do that too.
Well, he did, so I can't wait to hear about his story.
Let's see if Al can get him on the line via Zoom today.
Okay,
Al. Are you awake?
Okay, Al. Cue him up.
Joining us now is Howard Owens, the owner and publisher of The Batavian in Batavia, New York. And thank you for joining us today, Howard.
Hey, Joe, Vince, great to be on with you guys.
Howard, you've got quite an illustrious background. I would say you are a entrepreneur in the local news business going back a couple of decades. I know you started your first newspaper when I think you were in fourth grade, and later on became a reporter for several newspapers in California and started a local website there, and then became a corporate news media executive. So you've worked in a number of local and corporate organizations. Can you give us a little bit of your career background, Howard?
Sure. Well, I appreciate it, Vince. Of course, you've been tied in with that yourself. We both share a background at the Daily Californian in East County, which was 3 years of a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
For some reason, I've always gravitated towards news. Like you mentioned, fourth grade. I didn't really consider news a career, though, until I was, in college and wound up getting involved with a friend owning a small weekly paper in a portion of San Diego, Ocean Beach, Point Loma area. Carlsbad Journal, Daily Californian, where we met. And then went into freelance for a while and started East County Online, which I like to say now was kind of probably the first hyper-local news site in the nation. That was 1995. And then had to make some job changes along the way and wound up in Ventura and eventually at the Ventura County Star. And that started me on the executive path until I landed in New York and wound up going back to kind of my entrepreneurial roots.
Yeah, let's talk about the hyper-local news startup a little bit. You mentioned that was 1995. So if anybody is looking on a timeline, the internet was probably very nascent back then. It wasn't being used for news sites tremendously. Can you sort of go back and share what the landscape of local news on the internet was back then?
So this is shortly after, Mosaic had been introduced, and probably about the time Mark Andreessen and his partners were introducing Netscape. Netscape was very new at the time. It seems like the first browser I had was Mosaic. And I had an opportunity, a man by the name of Ron James, who went on to become the content director for Sign On San Diego, the Union Tribune's website at one point. He was running San Diego Magazine at that time, and he told me, I interviewed him for a story for the San Diego Business Journal, and he said, hey, you want to be our East County correspondent? And I said, I've got a better idea. This friend of mine owns some weekly newspapers out here. Let's launch East County Online. And he gave me free server space. And I didn't even know HTML at that point. But I just thought that was an opportunity I wanted to go after. It seemed like that was the way to go. At the time, from research I did at the time, there were about 100 daily newspapers with websites. Two other weekly newspapers had websites. And so, but we were one of the first. We were doing original content online. We had free classifieds. That was before I knew about Craigslist. We had, you know, kind of drilled down on a, kind of a lot of hyperlocal stuff. We tried to get sort of a community bulletin board going at the time before there was really software to really run something like that. So that's why I like, you know, looking back on it, I didn't position it that way for a number of years, but I realized we're probably like the first hyperlocal news site in the nation at that point.
Yeah. And so we've been talking about local news and the lack of it these days, and how important that is to democracy in general. But, you know, what, how would you define, you've been in this space now for at least, well, 13 years with the Batavian, but longer than that with the East County Venture. Well, how do you define local news, and talk a little bit about why it's so important? And I actually stole a quote from you just now in a previous interview you did with editor and publisher, and you said, local news, the future of democracy depends on local news. So can you expound on that a little bit?
It's interesting. I heard, I was on a conference call with Chuck Schumer not too far back, and he's talking about local news, and he said local news is the DNA of local communities. And I remember using that at a conference I spoke at with the American Press Institute back in probably 2004, 2005. That's kind of how I always viewed, you know, news is what binds a community together. You know, I could get into a lot of, you know, stats about how strong communities are interconnected. And they have strong business communities, and that leads to higher graduation rates, lower infant mortality rates, lower teen pregnancy rates. I mean, there's all kinds of positive outcomes when you have strong local communities. So that's one reason I'm really passionate about it. But for me is, you know, local news is what happens, you know, however you define what your coverage area is. For us, it's a county. For some people, it's a neighborhood. You know, but what happens in that locale, and that's what you should focus on. That's what you should care on. That should be care about. That should be what your brand is. You don't want people thinking of you as anything other than really passionate about the area that you're covering.
Mm-hmm. And how does accountability play into that with agencies and things of
local government and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that there's two ways of looking at it. You know, a lot of people decry the lack of resources to do investigative reporting. And gee, wouldn't it be great if we had somebody who was always, you know, fulfilling that watchdog role? But that doesn't mean that we don't do that occasionally. You know, do enterprise reporting, if not investigative reporting. You know, I have gotten an award along those lines in the process of doing the Batavian. But I think just showing up at government meetings is one of the first most important functions. And we deal all the time with local government agencies that don't get as much coverage. And they're nervous and sometimes reluctant or a little difficult to deal with when it comes to, you know, releasing public information or being as completely transparent as they should be, because they don't deal with reporters enough. When government agencies deal with reporters all the time, especially when it's a competitive situation, like we have with the Batavia Daily News and, say, the Batavia City Council, they're much more transparent because they've got two reporters hounding them all the time. And so they know they're going to get asked about it. They're knowing they're going to be held accountable. And I think that's kind of the first level, the most important bit level about community reporting, local journalism, is just showing up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think obviously the easy one to describe is local government, but there's also local business, right? Sometimes businesses have to be held accountable as well, both environmentally or what they're doing with their employees, or how they're just behaving in general in the local landscape. And the lack of local news really takes the spotlight off of that, doesn't it?
I don't know. I guess, I think you're more familiar with kind of a big metropolitan area. It's kind of a mixed bag at the small hyperlocal area level, because, you're dealing with really a lot of small businesses, and they're not the ones out causing generally big environmental damage, or the ones that are going to be caught up in big, say sexual harassment scandals or anything. Not that that doesn't happen to the small business, but does it rise to kind of newsworthiness when you're talking about a really small business? I will say, however, there I've done some stories, like a story I recall recently, two stories involving one of our larger agricultural producers. A local environmentalist had raised an issue about some discharges into a nearby creek, which, he had documentation. We covered that. And then at the start of COVID, same business, there's some questions about how they were handling their COVID cases. And we covered that. So there's still, those things do come up. And I think if you didn't have local reporting existing, then those things would be the public would be much less aware of those situations.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it true that a lot of the bigger media organizations get their local stories from local news sites who cover them, and then they say, oh, well, this is a big enough story for us to cover, so yeah, we're going to go out and cover it.
Well, my friend Dylan Smith down at Tucson Sentinel complains all the time about stories he's broken that the New York Times has picked up and acted like nobody had it before them. Mm-hmm. And, stand on the shoulders of his reporting without acknowledging it. And, remember, we used to deal with this at the Daily Californian. We'd cover a story 2 or 3 weeks later, and this was I'm going to share with you a reporter frustration, Vince. It's, one of us would cover a story 2 or 3 weeks later, the LA Times or the San Diego Union Tribune would, back then it was the Union or the Tribune, would pick up the story, after we've already covered it, and the editor would come around saying, how come we don't have this? Or like, we beat them on this story.
Yeah.
I'll do it again.
That would have been me holding my hand up. So, in the landscape of the media over the last 15 or 20 years, though, it's the statistics show that, for instance, 2,100 newspapers have gone away in the last 15 years. And a lot of those were smaller weeklies or community papers because of the economics of it in some sense. And then the other economic of big corporations, buying some of the smaller local news sites and then sort of cookie cuttering the operations. So have you seen that how do you view the landscape of local news changing since you started the Batavian?
Well, anything that's happened since I started the Batavian is just a continuation of trends that started really in the 70s. I mean, mm-hmm. As family dynasties died off and the heirs didn't want the responsibility of the newspaper, families would sell to Frank Gannett, some of them went to a well-run family chains like Scripps or McClatchy, which have both disappeared in the time that I've had the Batavian. Mm-hmm. There was that consolidation going on. You had a tremendous change in, this doesn't get talked about enough, but Walmart had a tremendous impact on the newspaper business because they had a tremendous impact on Main Street America. And Walmart does not advertise in newspapers, traditionally hasn't. But those businesses on Main Street did. And that forced newspapers to make a switch away from relying so much on retail advertising to classifieds. And that's when you get into verticals that, auto and real estate and everything, with much higher dollar values. And that became a major source of revenue for newspapers. And that's pretty much what the internet destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. You know, can I ask a question though? Both of you guys are media experts, or you've been in media for a long time, but there was a phrase used earlier that I think bears a little clarification. There's local news and then there's hyper local news. Did somebody say hyper local news? Is there something like what you're doing? Is that smaller than like the Detroit area needs local news too, but it's a bigger metropolitan area?
A decade ago, 15 years ago, hyper local was the big buzz term. It was always kind of somewhat mocked and ridiculed. A lot of people, and it's kind of fallen out of favor now. It's not used much. People just talk about local news. But, I used it in context of that, just to kind of clarify what we're doing at East County Online. And what we do now is just that there is a laser focus on local that exists when you are, quote unquote, hyper local, that's a little bit different from the old local newspaper days. Because the former, and I was debating with somebody about this online the other day, the former model before the internet, the former model of local newspaper, and this applied to the Daily Californian to some extent, was you carried Associated Press. My job when I was wire editor, Vince will remember, that's when he first came on, I was a wire editor, was to put together page three, and it was all the wire stories. In a hyper-local context, you don't do that.
Okay.
And one of the things I was arguing about is, newspapers today still do that and shouldn't. Even if you're in print, everybody has access just a click away to all the world's news. You need to be laser focused on your local community. That needs to be your brand.
Mm-hmm.
I at every newspaper I've worked at, in my career since the internet came along, I fired Associated Press. We stopped using Associated Press online.
But with the advent of the internet, everything has really kind of, the pendulum has swung the other way, right? And that's really why we have these news deserts, is because people are becoming more satisfied with the idea of this national or international news and maybe don't know what they're missing.
I think it's more complex than that. Vince may remember this book, but back in the late 90s, Philip Meyer wrote a book called The Vanishing Newspaper, and he talked about corporate ownership harvesting, which is they're just taking profits out. And then at the time he wrote that, it was really prophetic because that really wasn't happening. But that's what we see now with like Alden, and to some extent, there's a couple other chains out there that are investor-owned. Equity capital owned,
private equity. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're interested making sure that they're always profitable. Profits come before every other business consideration. And so that's where you get the reduction in staff and you get the closure of unprofitable or underperforming newspapers. And that can particularly hit small communities hard that are already struggling because, they've been shrinking, rural populations have been shrinking across the country for decades. So that is kind of what's been going on in creating, I'd say that's the primary factor in creating these news deserts. One of the interesting things, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but a journalism professor here in New York who is well known for his internet punditry 20 years ago or so, he and I argued all the time about the value and future of local news, because he kind of believed along these lines that, as he suggested, that people we're part of a global community now. They're not really interested in what's going on in their local community. And I'm like, no, I didn't believe that for 1 minute. I didn't have a lot of evidence. I'd say the Batavian has given me the evidence. I mean, you look at how popular we are, how the praise I get around the community, people are really hungry to know what's going on in their local community. They want to hear the scanner calls. They want to see the police beat stuff, but they also want to see the new restaurant openings are one of the most popular things we do. I mean, They want that entire package of what's going on in my community today, this week, if not this minute. There's a real hunger for it. And I think there's a lot of entrepreneurs, potential entrepreneurs out there who are missing out on the opportunity to create that kind of value.
How has big tech tried to fill that gap? And do you think it has successfully? And, you know, more specifically, you open up a Facebook feed and you know, you're getting, I'll put news in quotes here, but you're getting information from a whole bunch of different sources. Some of it's vetted, some of it's not vetted. To me, I don't think it's sufficient. But how has social media impacted local news, in your opinion, in the last 10, 15 years?
Okay. Well, I'll address that. There's probably two questions embedded there, but let's talk about social media first. So when I started social media, the Facebook was really brand new. And when I started the Batavian, rather, Facebook was really brand new. Right at the point that the Batavian launched, you still had to be a college student to get a Facebook account. Mm-hmm. And it opened up in the first few months of the Batavian. It'd be another 2 or 3 years before they had this concept of pages and started to have news on Facebook. So Facebook was not, I look back, you know how you get your memories on Facebook? I looked at stuff back at what I posted, you know, in 2009, 2010, before pages opened up. And it shows me how much Facebook has changed. Because back then it was more like the parody that a lot of people do about social media. Here's what I'm having for dinner tonight.
You know? Right.
Facebook was not a factor. I was able to grow my business through interaction in the local community. New publishers today tend to be much more dependent on Facebook. I have a certain degree of dependence on Facebook. But for the most part, my audience is pretty baked in. We've established a brand. We've established a habit before Facebook came along. So new publishers, I think, have a much bigger challenge. But Facebook, I really kind of want to drill down on this if I can. You know, Facebook is the largest looming threat to local news there is. And it doesn't get talked about enough. There's a bill through before Congress now to make Google and Facebook pay for local news. And to me, they're only getting half right. Google is not a threat. Google is not a problem for local news at any level. And I think publishers that blame Google really don't understand their own business or the internet. But Facebook is sort of, you know, and when people talk about this bill, when there's commentary about the bill, the focus is on Google. Google is not the threat. Facebook is death by a thousand cuts. They rely on our content, although they're talking about de-emphasizing it now, but they use our content a lot. They use news content a lot to drive interactions. Then they create these groups that take away from the community conversation. They take away classifieds. They're going after our local advertising business. Now, we haven't lost much, if any, revenue to Facebook, but, you know, it creates turbulence in the marketplace for a competitor like Facebook to come along.
When you say taking your revenues, are you talking about Facebook Marketplace and the ads that they
Well, Facebook Marketplace is really named after more kind of the classified thing.
Yeah.
Classified revenue. And that's a problem. But Facebook groups around virtual garage sales is like a bigger problem than Marketplace. Marketplace really doesn't have that much traction. But they are marketing to, you know, local businesses, promote your, you know, do a post and promote it, and it's not expensive, so it hasn't hurt us, too much, but there are a couple of businesses that rely on that exclusively that might
have local bake shops and stuff like that.
Right.
I see.
And then the other thing that's been happening that's really been frustrating is we have non-government agencies and government agencies that oftentimes now, instead of sending us a press release, we'll just put something up on Facebook and think that's good enough. And if we say anything about it, well, it was on Facebook. Well, you know, I don't see everything that everybody posts on Facebook. Nobody does. And but they'll rely on Facebook, or they'll just publish their own news to Facebook. We've had a problem with the local school district events, you know, last spring that normally we would be invited to cover, that I've traditionally been invited to cover. We were not invited to cover. They covered it themselves on Facebook. And when I complained about it, they said, we made a decision. We didn't want local media there. And I could never get an explanation why. And why is it okay to put those pictures on Facebook where they can be distributed globally without your control? You know, you're not, if it's a safety issue, I mean, that certainly is, can't be it. I mean, why do they want to put it on Facebook? So there's this growing awareness that's a concern for me among government agencies in particular, that we can just route around the local media and we really don't need them. Our county government just hired a new manager of social media who is going to, you know, cover themselves. Another school district just has a new manager starting today of social media. You're seeing that more and more. I'm hoping to find a way that we can work cooperatively, because at least like the school district that out in Leroy that has this new social media manager, I talked to the superintendent this morning. He gets it. He knows a post on our site is going to reach a heck of a lot more people than anything on Facebook. So he wants to be sure we're cooperating with each other, but not everybody gets that. And that's, so all those factors together is why I say Facebook's like a death of a thousand cuts. It's just eating away at us. And I worry about what the long-term impact, because it's, you know, the proverbial frog, to mix metaphors, the proverbial frog boiling in hot water. Mm-hmm.
So there, do you think it's, and maybe it's a combination of both, do you think it's a resources issue, or is it possible that they just don't want to answer questions from journalists any longer? You say controlling the news. I mean, that's a big, scary walrus looking, you know, citizens in the face right there.
Right. And I don't think it's anything knowing these. I mean, these are people in my community. I know them. I don't think there's any nefarious intent there. It's an excitement about being able to do it themselves. It's we can't, you know, school districts in New York. I don't know how it is, up in the Detroit area. But, per pupil spending in New York is like $3,000 a year more than any other school state in the union. I mean, the amount of money, there is just no barrier to spending money at schools in New York. And there's just no resistance. Nobody fights back against school spending at any level on anything. And so they can go out and do this, and it's fun and exciting. And they feel like they're doing a service for their community. They feel like they're doing the right thing because all the parents can see Johnny's picture on Facebook.
But there's no analysis. Nobody's right. Giving any editorial, angle to it, I guess.
Right. And I don't think there's any consideration that this happens often enough. And if they are successful, so far they haven't been, but if they are successful at taking eyeballs away from us, and then advertisers start to realize that, then, you know, they're jeopardizing our business model, and then they're not going to have that independent coverage, which I think every one of these school superintendents, save a couple that I've had conflicts with, but most of them would say that they welcome us showing up at their meetings, that, it helps create trust in what they're doing when a journalist shows up and covers them. It doesn't have to be negative coverage, just coverage saying, yeah, Here's what's going on at the governmental level.
They're not trying to control the narrative you're thinking, but in effect, that's what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah, that's the result. So we've talked a lot about the local news landscape, but let's talk a little bit more about the Batavian. So give us the basic, the basic outlay of the Batavian, who you cover, what you cover, how you cover it, a little bit about Batavia, New York, for some of the people that may be listening from other places. I do know Batavia was the home for that big movie. They filmed there. What was it? Trains, Planes, and Automobiles?
Yeah, there was some scenes filmed in Genesee County with John Candy and Steve Martin. Yes, nice. And still talked about it quite a bit. And also, there were some scenes filmed here for The Natural, you know, the Robert Redford movie.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. Build it and they will come. That's what you did. You had quite the success story. And it's okay to brag when you talk about the Batavian, because it really is a success story.
Yeah, well, I'm proud of it. I'm proud of, what I've accomplished in this community. I'm from San Diego. I moved here specifically because of the Batavian. And, you know, one of the local business owners has commented and complimented me on how quickly I became embedded in the community. Like a lot of small towns, Batavia can be resistant to newcomers. And I was accepted pretty quickly and have been accepted. And it's, always gratifying to go to an event. Like, I went to an event last night and everybody, as I walk in, is like, "Hey, Howard," that's nice. The county has 57,000 people in it. That's our coverage area. We do 12 to 14,000 unique visitors on a weekday. The vast majority of them are right here from Genesee County. Wow. Or, we get a lot of commuters that live and work in Buffalo and they visit the site frequently. That work in Buffalo but live here, or Rochester but live here. And we get a lot of traffic during the day, during daytime hours from those cities. So, the traffic has been pretty phenomenal for the last decade at least. And, we've always had a reputation of everybody, I'm using quote air quotes, even though we're talking, but everybody reads the Batavian. And, we have typically 140, 150 advertisers on our homepage at any one time. I don't think that you're going to find many newspapers, even four or five times our size. I've never seen a newspaper website anywhere in the country that has as many advertisers as we do. And there may be some newspapers with more revenue because they're bigger markets, they can charge more. But at, $250,000, $270,000 in revenue a year of pure, not upsold, but pure play internet revenue, I just don't think there are many newspaper websites that can match that.
So what's the secret sauce? Obviously you're a very likable guy. You were brought into the, you came and were welcome into the community. Obviously that's a good part of it, right? But do you have to dig constantly? Do you have to put in 80 hours a week? Like, what is it that you think? Obviously you're providing good content and that helps the advertisers want to, advertise with you. And obviously you got great readership. But what do you think is the secret sauce for you versus some of these other places where it hasn't been thought of as a good opportunity?
Well, I'll try to unpack that a little bit. First of all, I don't think I'm anything special as far as likable or charismatic or any of that kind of stuff. I have no special powers, but I think, just the ability to go in and talk to a local, I sold ads for the site in the beginning, and there's the ability to go in and be relatable to another small business owner, something anybody can do. You don't have to be terribly articulate to do that. I don't think there's anything particular about me that contributes to the success. It is a lot of hard work, and I've been willing to do that. Not everybody's willing to do that, but again, that's not, you don't need anything special in your DNA to be able to do that. I think there's a formula that certainly at this level and probably slightly bigger is replicable, and that is, our motto, especially early on, is to answer the question every minute of every day, what's going on in my community? To be honest, I don't think we do that now as well as we used to for a variety of reasons. But I think at least at the start, that's really key. One of the things I discovered, it'd be a long story, I'll just give you kind of the short version of it, is that people don't click on links. It's kind of misunderstood a lot about the internet that people really don't like to click on links. They go to a web page with specific intention. That's why we put all the stories on the homepage. And we don't have, you don't have to click a link to read a story. You can, it's just all right there. That's why we put all the ads on the homepage. You can see everybody that's advertising our community. It becomes like the local business directory because it's all right there. Readers and advertisers love that. Readers and advertisers love the easy use of our site. The emphasis on breaking news, listening to the scanner, getting out to accidents and fires and covering them quickly is important. All the like little community news, just kind of what's going on now, who are the interesting people, the new businesses opening, you know, having that kind of complete aspect of it is another key ingredient. You put all that together, like, and like I told you earlier, people really want to know what's going on in the community. Local news sells. It's an easy sell. Selling to local advertisers, retail display ads is an easy sell. A lot of people are resistant to these ideas in the larger local news universe, newspaper universe. Old newspaper people a lot of times even like fight against these ideas, but it's really basic and really easy. And I think the success of the Batavian and some other similar ventures across the country, prove it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about other sites like the Batavian. How many are out there? You mentioned all of the things that have to get covered. And I know you post 4, 5, 6, 7 different things a day. So what kind of resources does it take? I know you're a small business, you're one guy, you have, I don't know how many employees you have, but what's your operation look like and what else is out there and why aren't there more sites like the Batavian? That's a bunch of questions all at once.
So there are roughly 400 local independent online news sites in the nation now, to my understanding. The degree to which some are successful, obviously not all are successful, not all follow our business model. Some rely on event revenue. Some rely on membership or subscription revenue. Not those that do advertising sometimes rely more on programmatic ads or network advertising than local advertising. So there's a bunch of different models out there. I got a friend down in San Angelo who does a great job. He's making a lot of money doing events and videos. I mean, that's his. He also sells ads. He's got ads, but he does both. Programmatic and local ads. So it's really kind of a mix. He's been very successful. Riverhead Local here in New York, and then just to the north of us, Orleans County, Orleans Hub, very similar business models to ours. ARL or Arlington Now down in Arlington, Virginia. Again, kind of a mix of advertising revenue going on there. So, I'm far from unique, but it also is a lot of work. When I started this, it was pretty much just me. My late wife, Billy, had not joined the business for the first several months. So I was writing all the stories after I took it over from Gatehouse. We haven't really got into that. But once it was my business, I was writing all the stories. I was selling all the ads and did that for months and building all the ads in Photoshop. And we didn't have an ad server. I had to physically put them on the site. So, it was a lot of work. Steve Jobs, great video on YouTube about it. The secret of success is, it's a lot of work and you have to be insane to do it. And I think that's true. And it remains a lot of work. It's been harder, frankly, for the last several months. Even though I do have more resources, I got a full-time online our new local news editor Joanne Beck, who used to be my competitor and is now part of the team and does a fantastic job. She's very well respected in the community as a journalist. And then Lisa Ace, who's been with me now for more than a decade handling all the advertising stuff, which is a big relief off my plate. I have to don't do that. And she's been a perfect fit because she really gets what we're about and our customers love her. She has great people skills and gets along very well with all of our advertisers. So then I have a whole host of freelancers that one person that will write occasional news stories for us, a couple of people that write features once in a while. And then I have an army of freelance photographers that I call on. Don't frankly get as much out of them as I'd like because they have other lives that keep them very busy, but it's nice to have those resources.
So it's a pretty good size organization when you look at all of the things that you just mentioned in a sense. I mean, it's not just you and somebody else. You've got a few people out there and you've got your secret sauce in Lisa and her relationships. And so you've developed quite an organization. What would you say to somebody who, say, was a journalist who had a passion for local news? How would you direct them? What would you say is the most important thing to develop something along the local news site?
First of all, I have a continual frustration. Every time there's been a wave of layoffs, I usually have at least one tweet where I say, if you're out of work, look around you, start a local news site. Mm-hmm. Why more journalists don't believe they can do this, I don't know. You one of the big hesitancies is a lot of times is, well, I don't know how to sell ads. No, you do. You sell yourself every day as a reporter, trying to get people to talk to you and give you information. You know, mm-hmm. You know how to be persuasive. It's going and talking to a local businessman and saying, give me some money, is no different. Mm-hmm. So, I think any journalist could develop the business sense to be able to do this. So I'm always kind of frustrated that more don't do it. You know, my encouragement is look around your community. How do you define your community? What is it? And then if you have 300 or 400 at a minimum locally owned businesses in your community, you have a viable business model. You know, set up a WordPress site and start selling ads.
Which is a little bit easier to do these days. You still have a confluence of skills that you need. I mean, you talk about photography and computers mm-hmm. and technology, but those are all things that a person can learn, and the tools are out there now.
You can learn on the fly. You know, I've won some awards for my photography. I was not the photographer necessarily when I started the Batavian. I purposely set out to make myself a good photographer. Mm-hmm. And that was just one of the things I wanted to learn. And it's, you know, talk about things that I think have helped our audience growth is having good photography. People appreciate it.
Yeah.
But I just mentioned that to say any of these skills, there are a whole bunch of skills that you need for this job. Yes. But you can learn them on the fly. You're building a business. You're not going to have a huge audience right at the beginning. It gives you some ramp up. If you can find a way. So for us, I needed to sell 40 ads in 3 months to have a bare minimum of revenue to keep the lights on, keep food on the table, keep a roof over our heads. And I went out and did that. And, you know, if you can afford that kind of ramp up, have any kind of resource to make it happen, I think doing this is in the grasp of a lot of people who don't realize that it is within their grasp.
And it's so fundamentally important, and fundamentally important to the consumer as well. So I think there should be an equal, maybe kind of call to action for the consumer to support this kind of thing as well.
Yeah. I do want part of me wants to add a little cautionary tale, a little caution to it is one of the things that I think has been difficult is my age going into this, which was late 40s, approaching 50. I had to be older than that. So because it's 14 years ago and I'm 61 now. So as I was, you know, mid 40s, keeping up the pace that I'm at is a lot harder at my age now. So, you know, when you're older, you're just, you know, your bones ache, you have injuries, you have health issues. And that's certainly taken a toll. You know, probably the ideal age to do this is when you have some experience in late 20s, early 30s, young 40s, because it's going to take some time to build a business where you have help. And I don't want to kid anybody. It's hard. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of stress. It's a lot of worry. Go watch that Steve Jobs video. You know, you kind of have to be insane to do it, but it's incredibly fulfilling, incredibly it's a lot of fun. If you love journalism, you're going to love doing this. You're your own boss. You make your own photo assignments. You make your own story assignments. What, you know, come on, Vince, you know how much I wanted to do that back at the
Daily
Californian.
And oftentimes you were.
Yes. So I was always kind of pigheaded in that way. And now, you know, nobody controls what I do. You want to be an independent journalist if you're in this. I mean, right. You want that independence. So why aren't more people out there doing it?
And I feel most journalists want to make a difference. And this is a way to make a difference, too. So,
yep. You need to find the difference you make. To me, it's incredibly insanely great thing to be able to do.
Well, you've had a long and illustrious career, and you've certainly contributed an enormous amount to the field of journalism. And I say that in having watched you for, 30 some years through your career, and it is mission critical. And I just want to ask you, as we close this down, to put your visionary hat on, and what do you think 10, 15, 20 years from now, the local news landscape looks like?
I've always been pretty optimistic. One of the things I used to talk about quite a bit when people criticize what I was doing and, you know, say the low cost of our advertising, low cost, those that have subscriptions, low cost to them. You know, as you look at the early penny press people, Horace Greeley, a little later, Hearst and Pulitzer, you know, they started with small operations. There's a tendency to think that every news organization came to life fully staffed with 50, 100, 400 people. Now, most of these news operations started really small. You know, William White in Kansas, you know, it was just him and a couple of people early on. And eventually that paper grew into a staff of, you know, I think 40 or 50 people all told. So the Emporia Gazette, now they're a lot smaller, but, you know, it takes time to build. You know, I tend to be mostly an optimist that we will adjust, and local news is incredibly important, and there'll be entrepreneurs willing to take it on, and there'll be people wanting to support it. I'm a little more pessimistic these days because go back to what I said about Facebook. Unless Facebook is reined in some way, I think it's an existential threat to local news.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right.
Well, on that note,
sorry to be so cheery.
No, it's very scary to think about, because we're used to having local news. I mean, all of us in our 60s probably had an abundance of local print newspapers. There was plenty of local news. I know when I was cutting my teeth as a reporter, I was going to 4 or 5 local city government meetings every week. It was commonplace, and it's not commonplace now. And so, I think the future of democracy depends on both citizens' consumption of local news and businesses getting it out there. So,
Vince, you think back our time together, I covered La Mesa. Mike Drummond covered El Cajon, but I filled in for a few times with them. El Cajon in particular, if you went to a meeting there, there was at least 2 other reporters there every time you went. Mm-hmm. I would bet that there are now meetings in El Cajon that don't get covered at all.
Yeah, right, right.
Well, that's why we're glad to have shined a light on this issue today. So thanks for your time.
Yeah, we want to thank you once again for your time. Howard, we hope that you'd be willing to join us in the future, if possible, for more enlightening discussions in our Friends in Wonder podcast. And may you and your dog have a wonderful evening.
Great. Well, thank thanks, you. Thanks for having me on, and good luck with your podcast.
Thanks again, Howard. Appreciate it. All right. Well, that interview sure didn't disappoint, that's for sure.
No, Howard is, he's not only a visionary, but he's somebody who adapted to the landscape of what was happening in the news business. And I have to say, one of the reasons that the news business is in such trouble, or local newspapers, or whatever you want to call it, is because
it is a dying industry.
I mean, they didn't adapt. They didn't adapt when people started taking away their classifieds. They didn't adapt when the business model started to change because to digital, of the internet, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And you know, I have to say this too. There's so many journalists who are purists that I've known in my last in the 30 years in the business, and they're very reluctant to change from the same purist standards I had when I was telling you that corporate interests would never, never dissolve.
Well, I think it's probably true of all humans, but you're saying that it might be even more so.
It could be, but you know what?
But he's a perfect example of how to adapt.
Exactly. If you're a journalist and you're looking for a mission to uphold journalism in its purest form, you should take a look at what Howard's doing at the Batavia.
Yeah, our democracy depends on it. And he proved, I specifically asked him, there's no secret sauce. You just got to be passionate about it.
Right.
And I'm sure there's a lot of passionate journalists out there who are in news deserts that could take a great example from Howard in our interview today.
And I think Howard also threw out a lot of things that readers should become better aware of as well.
Yeah, I think the whole overall idea is people need to be aware where they're getting their information from and what they want to support so that it's there for years to come.
Yeah. And if they're not getting the information that they need to start demanding it.
Yeah, exactly. And supporting it. So, yeah, that was good, Vince. I really liked it a lot. I think there was a lot there for everybody.
Onward we go. Wondering friends in wonder.
All right. I like it.
Have a great day, Joe.
You too. Well, so ends another episode of Friends in Wonder. We really want to thank you for listening. If you'd like to listen to more episodes, provide feedback, questions, or even suggest topics you'd like us to wonder about in future episodes, be sure to check us out at friendsinwonder.com. We'd also be grateful if you'd subscribe, like, or share this podcast. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Vince.
And we're Friends in Wonder.